Okay, a Greek glaze is going to start off with the fourth reading, which is also chapter 29, Parshas Tetzaveh. So the Kohanim are going to have these fancy clothes, and these beautiful clothes, the sacred raiments, that will enable the Kohanim to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. As we have mentioned previously, Bizman Shebigdeyim Aleim, the Gemara says, as long as they're wearing their clothes, Kohunasam Aleim, then their Kohuna, their priesthood, is upon them. But in order for them to become those special people, in order for them to be able to be susceptible to the magic and holiness that the special clothes provide, you have to be a Kohen. And therefore, something had to be done. They had to be inaugurated, and the inaugural ceremony, or the empowerment of Aaron and his future progeny, takes place, or at least is discussed, right over here. Now you know, or maybe you don't, that the Kohanim had to go through these inaugural rites for 7 days, from the 23rd day of Adar until the 29th day of Adar. Each and every day, they dressed in the Kohanic clothing, they performed special inaugural rites, and then on the 8th day, which is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, God's presence descends to the Mishkan, the Kohanim becomes sanctified for posterity, for all time.
Each and every year?
No.
Well,
once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. Once in world history. Just once. That's
just
it.
Once, oh, okay.
This is it. So now we're talking about exactly that. Those rites that are going to be performed, after which the Kohanim will be Kohanim forever. So this is effectively creating a spiritual DNA change that will be passed down ad infinitum, for few generations.
So any Israel would not have to go through this, or any of the other...
Who is that? Nobody has to become a Kohen again, so to speak. Once they become a Kohen, and not only that, you really can't become a Kohen. Now, it's that famous story, the joke, the guy shows up with the rabbis, wants to make this huge donation. The rabbi says, why? What? Look. He says, I just want one thing. I want to be a Kohen. He says, okay, listen, for enough money, we could do whatever you want, but it wasn't this kind of show, of course. He said to him, but why do you want to be a Kohen so badly? And the man said, listen, my father was a Kohen. My grandfather was a Kohen. It's hereditary. It's passed off from generation to generation. Right? But this is where it all began. And here's God's instructions to Moshe Rabbeinu of how this is going to get done. Who empowers Aaron and his future progeny? Actually, it's Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe is the one who unlocks the key of their spiritual potential. He is the one who brings about this transformation. Let us see. V'zeh hadover. This is the thing. Asher tasa, which you will do, lohem to them, lekadesh osam, to sanctify them, lechah only, so that they might serve unto me. Lekach par echod ben bakar, you'll take a young calf. The elim shnayim, and two rams, tamimim, these have to be perfectly intact animals, perfectly intact specimens. So Rashi says, lekach, it's a very unusual way for us to start this pasuk. The lamed here, lekach, is part of the actual word itself. It's not just modifying the word. It's kemoi kach, like in Hebrew, take. Ushtei gzeiros heinis, Rashi says that there are two specific or different, call them root words in Hebrew. Achas shel kicha, one is the word of kicha, which means take. Ve'achas shel likicha, and one is to take, but with a lamed. V'lohem pisrein echad. In case you were wondering, what's the difference? I don't know. Rashi doesn't say there's a difference. In fact, he says they happen to mean the same thing. But kicha and likicha both mean take. Here, the word likach is not kach with a lamed in front, which modifies the word. Oftentimes we have in Hebrew, we modify a word with a letter in the front, or two letters in the front. Here, we have a word. Likach is a word. And it means you should take. Par echad, one calf. So why is it only a par echad? It's like the par is just one. When it comes to the rams, we have two, but the par is echad. Why? So he says, Rashi says, this is lechaper al maisei ha'egel. This is to atone for the sin of the golden calf, and this gives us like a little kind of a, like a hint as to what's going on over here. Aaron HaKohen has to be inducted into the priesthood, but there's also a stain on Aaron HaKohen, and that is the stain of the golden calf. Mm-hmm. As we can learn about in next week's parsha, Aaron HaKohen has participation, involuntary participation, unwitting participation, unwanting participation, but ultimately a very, very significant role in the crafting of that terrible idol,
So it's Parshat Tetzaveh, totally out of chronological order relative
to... All of these parshiot are totally out of chronological order, because we know that the sin of the golden calf was 40 days after the Torah was given.
And this is not...
And this we learned is the day after Yom Kippur.
Okay.
Parshas Yisro is the day after Yom Kippur, according to most opinions, according to Rashi. Parshas Mishpatim is certainly... The Pashtos, simply stated, all of these parshiot are after Moshe Rabbeinu returns, after the first Yom Kippur, after the Jewish people are atoned for.
When you say Parshat Yitro, you mean just the advice that Yitro gave?
The advice, that's correct.
When he actually
the
arrives.
Advice that Parshat Yisro opens with, and we go back to Matan Torah, and then we fast forward to the events that take place months and months later. But this is the way the Torah is written, in the order of conveying certain messages, not in chronological or historical order. I mean, usually we don't have Avraham Avinu after Moshe Rabbeinu. That there's certain chronology here, but the specific chronology doesn't work. And that's because the Torah is not a history book. It uses history. The Torah is a book of instructions. It's a book of lessons for life. So you're going to take these offerings, and these offerings will atone for the sin of the golden calf. I mean, ultimately, it's not just Aaron, but Aaron will have to represent the Jewish people as the Kohen Gadol. He is their Kohen Gadol. The Kohanim are their Kohanim, representing all of Am Yisrael, and all of the nation bears the guilt of this sin. So at any rate, this is the procedure through which Aaron and his sons will become sanctified. Now, the Or HaChaim asks a very interesting question. He says, what does it say, V'zeh HaDovar Asher Tase? This is the thing. Why doesn't he just say, V'zeh Asher Tase? That whole word seems entirely superfluous. In fact, if that word would be left out, virtually nobody would know the difference. We would sit down with a doctor at Chumash, I'll read it for you, V'zeh Asher Tase. You wouldn't say, hey, there's a word missing here. You wouldn't notice. Interesting, Rashi doesn't talk about this, but the Or HaChaim does. And the Or HaChaim says that HaDovar means to say that you cannot use the clothes or do anything else before this. This is the first thing. This is like item number one. Until these offerings are brought, until we go through these rites, there's nothing to talk about. The Kohanim's clothes will not have meaning. The Kohanim's inaugural rites will not be effective. This is the thing. It's like you have a conversation with somebody and say, okay, so this is the thing. In order for us to do this, such and such has to transpire or take place. Now, Rabbi Bachaya has a totally different approach to this. He interprets this more in the terms of the Torah's longer, deeper, or futuristic message. He says this is where the first time we hear about offerings. I mean, there are offerings that are brought prior to Moshe Rabbeinu before Matan Torah, but we don't hear about offerings in the context of Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash. This is the beginning of it all. And the whole Leviticus will follow this. This is the first time we're actually going to have details of Hashem telling this is how the animal offering should be brought. And Rabbeinu Bachaya says, of course, the Torah knows that there's come a time we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we're not able to bring offerings. So what will happen then? You know what happens to Aaron. I know how he's inducted into the Kahuna. We know how this initiates the rites of priesthood. What will happen afterwards? So the Rabbeinu Bachaya says, that's the Hadover. There's the thing. There's the words. We use our words. That's the idea of our prayers called Musaf, or where we read and invoke the memory of the offerings by speaking about them. That's the Mishnah we read every single morning. That's the Korbanot that we recite. That's the Torah readings, the Haftorah additional readings, which speak of the offerings. That's called Unishalma Parim Sfaseinu, that we pay the burden of bullocks, so to speak. Or instead of bringing the Korban, the offering, it's Sfaseinu, it's our lips that do this.
So you're saying the word Davar is Dibur?
So the word Davar, that's what I've been in B'chaya. But that's like, it's a non-literal, so like, What Or HaChaim says is, here's explaining the verse, the here and now. Rabbeinu Bachaya sees something futuristic, something like long-term here. There's also lip service. That's the origin, by the way, of lip service. It happens to be real. Only in English it means nothing, but real lip service is real. This is the best we can do. People say, oh, you pay me lip service, right? The lechem matzos. So in addition to these animals, there's going to be some wafers. So lechem matzah, lechem is bread, of course, but if it's matzah, it's going to be flatbread, bread that has no leavening process. So there's lechem matzahs. Then there's chalos matzahs, which is another kind of matzah, or another kind of bread. Belulos bashemen, these are kneaded in oil. Then there's rekike matzos. Then we have wafers of matzah. So we have bread of matzah, challah of matzah, wafers of matzah. And these wafers are meshuchim bashamen. These are glazed with oil, soilus, made of the finest flour of chitim, of wheat, tasa isam. You have to make them. And then the Torah is going to go on to give instructions that you put all these different breads. There are 30 breads in total. We have 10, 10, and 10 of three different sorts. You put them in a basket, and you have to bring the basket, and you have to bring the animals, and then you have to take Aaron and his sons, and you have to put them in the mikveh, and then you have to put them on the special clothing. And then you have to start this whole process, and you take the oil, and you put the oil in them, and so on. It's a whole process that's going to be unfolding in front of us. I'm not going to go into that now. We don't have time. But I do want to take a moment to look at these different breads and wafers and challahs, and then we'll take a deeper look into what's going on here with regard to the Greek glaze. V'lechem matzos, v'challahs matzos, v'rekikeh matzos. The Torah says three different things. Lechem of matzah, challah, bread, challah, and then rekikeh. What is it? Rashi says, harei elu gimel minim. You see here three different sorts. These are three different sorts of meal offerings. Not animal offerings, but that which is brought from the vegetative world. We have revucha, which is how Rashi refers to the lechem, and we'll soon see what that means. It means like scalded dough. We have chalais, and we have rekikim. And this is basically what happens. The original bagel happens right here. In other words, the dough is scalded in boiling hot water. Like, apparently that's how they make a bagel. So the revucha has some oil inside the flour, and then it's scalded in boiling hot water, and afterwards it's baked. Is that how a bagel is made?
Yeah.
It is, right? So, but the difference in this bagel and that bagel is the bagels you have, besides the fact that your teeth are left inside the bagel, if they're from Montreal.
Those are the best.
Right? Yeah, I know you're Montrealist, those are the best. One Montreal says in Toronto, the bagels are just dough in a circle, like it's not real bagels. All right, so beside the main difference is that in the bagel world, it's hard on the outside, but it's soft on the inside, and it's like fluffy, or not so fluffy, but there's a density, and that's chametz. This is matzah. This didn't really go anywhere. This is bagel matzahs. I don't know. Nobody has marketed this yet. Apparently, it's not so popular. So we have lechem matzah. That's the second kind. And that's made in a very different way. As the Torah says, that's kneaded with oil. And then we have this third kind, which is a dry wafer. And there's no oil needed in it. It's not boiled. It's only baked. However, it's glazed afterwards. So there's the lechem matzos, he keruya lemata be'inyan. This is what's going to be called later chalas lechem shemen. Really, it's called chala. There's a certain richness or moistness. That's because there's oil that's kneaded into the flour. Al shem shenoisen shemen berevucha keneged hachalas, because there's as much oil as there's flour. So it's very, very moist and very oily kind. Verikikin, and the chala minim boim esachalas, and all of these different kinds of breads come 10 apiece. So three sorts, 10 apiece. We're talking about 30 items, 30 pieces. And this is part of the inaugural procedure. Belula is b'shemen. Rashi says, kneaded in oil means kishahin kemach, when they're still in a flour state, yotzik b'hem shemen, you pour the oil over it, u'boilulon, and then you knead them together. The last of the kind, which don't have oil kneaded into it, are mishuchim b'shemen, which means achar afi yosan moishchan. After they're being baked, that's when they are glazed with oil afterwards. And the oil that's kind of smeared on or glazed on is kemin chof yevanis, like the equivalent of a Greek chof, which is called a lambda, apparently. Shehi asuya, which the Greek chof is made ke nun shalanu, like our nun. So even though it's called the chof, it's the closest to the chof, but it looks more like a nun. So Rashi in Menachos actually says that it looks like a tes. It basically is upside, it's a triangle. It's like a sideways triangle. That's what it looks like.
That's a rekike?
That's what a chaf yevanis, that's what the Greek chaf, the equivalent of the Greek chaf. In other words, the letter chaf in Hebrew, its Greek equivalent is called a lambda, which is like an angled chaf, mm-hmm. Like this. Rashi says there it looks like a tes. I guess if you rotate it like this, it looks like a tes. And the Tosfos says it could be looked like as a nun or as a chof. In Hodius, Rashi says it's a big ches. Anyway, some say it looks like a sea. The English words, the origin of the English word sea, which is the equivalent of the word chof. Chof with a dot inside is k. And that's, interestingly enough, a lot of people spell the Hebrew name Kohen in English with a C. It's very rarely spelled with a K, it's spelled with a C. So the C is the equivalent of the chaf, which this is the equivalent of the Greek letter lambda that took the place of a chaf. What's the obvious question? What's a Greek letter doing? I mean, if the Greek letter is like our chaf, just say like our chaf. If it's like our nun, say like it's a nun, a tes, a ches. I'm like, how did the Greeks get in here? Why does Rashi say that even? Like, really, what is going on here? Like, it's all Greek to us. Like, we don't even know what he's talking about. Rashi's saying this at a time. Rashi, I don't even know if he spoke Greek.
It's an allegory to Hanukkah, I bet you.
There's got to be some kind of allegory here. It's got to be related to something. So it gets even better. Because, as the Rebbe points out, if you open the Bureau book now, 2 pages of Eish Samach, entry number Chai, 18, in the Parsha of Tetzave, the Rebbe asks a very interesting question. He says, in Parshas Vayikra, the same idea shows up. And over there, Rashi actually brings a machlokes, a dispute of our sages, with regard to the meshicha, with regard to the smearing or glazing of the olive oil over these rekiki matzahs, over these wafers. And Rashi says, and this is a quote, Nechluku rabbeinu b'meshichasan. Our sages have a dispute. This is the beginning of the second chapter of Leviticus. Our sages have a dispute about the glazing, about the smearing of the oil. Yesh emrim, there are those who say, Moishchin, v'chayzer o'moishchan, Achiyichla, kol Hashem Shebelug, that this is just the Greek glaze. Forget the Greek. It's just you glaze it and glaze it and glaze it. You keep smearing the oil over till there's no oil left. The Yeshayimrim, there are others who say, Meishchin kimin chaf yivanis, that you glaze it in the shape of this angular chaf, meaning the Greek chaf, which is an angular chaf. Maduaifei, why here, Mazker Kan Rashi is a Pirish Hasheni Bavad? Why here does Rashi only mention the second opinion? And later he brings both opinions. We're not even getting into what are the Greeks doing here. We'll see that in a minute. Number two, L'shema Ma'irich Rashi L'farish Kimin Chof Yevonis. Why does Rashi have to go in this long, circuitous language? It's basically the equivalent of scratching your left ear with your right hand. He says, Kimin Chof Yevonis, like a Greek equivalent of a Chof, which is, incidentally is like our Nun. It's like the Greek Chof, which is a Nun. I'll just say,
it's a Nun.
That's all. V'harei, im tzuras ha-chof ha-yivonis, if the Greek chof is k'tzuras ha-nun shalon, it looks like our nun, so then Rashi should just have said, moishchon kimin nun. Then you should glaze them in the shape of a nun. There you go. It fits so nicely. Month of Nisan, nun, I don't know. No meaning, whatever. But it's like that is the shape anyway. He anyway says that it looks like a nun. So if it anyway looks like a nun, what was the point of saying a Greek equivalent of the chof, which by the way, looks like a nun? Say nun. What is accomplished? What's achieved by this? And I want to point out that in Rashi's times, Greek was no longer a very popular language, at least not amongst the Jewish people. It's not like Rashi was like, he gives you his French interpretations. Everybody was speaking Greek. You say, oh, that's Greek to me. Perfect. Thank you, Rashi. Now, most of the people who read Rashi, my guess is they have no clue what he's talking about. They never read Greek. They never saw Greek. Rashi knew who exactly he was talking about. Why bother? Vabir bezeh. So this is the Rebbe's explanation. Hasiba lekach shah meshicha, the reason that the glazing of the smearing is kimin chof yivonis, is like this Greek chof. Any mikris, this is not like, well, you know, it just happens to be a Greek chof. No. He bo l'rameis al inyan kahuna. Right here, what's happening? What's happening here is they're becoming kohanim. The word kohen and kahuna starts with the ois chof. Abba Bernel emphasizes this, by the way. And therefore Rashi says that the Meshicha is like a Chof Yevonis. Why? Because the emphasis here is Kehuna. And interestingly, like I said, people maintain that this letter, Lambda, in Greek, in today's day and age, is the letter in English. That's where English letter C comes from. And C is still how we spell the word Kohen, most often. In other words, Vizeo Yuseida Hevdel, this is the difference between the wafers of Parshas Vayikra and the wafers here. These wafers are a chelek of korbanot hamiluim. These wafers are part of the inaugural ceremony, the inaugural rites. shenayadu, which were specifically designated lekadesh es aharon, to sanctify Aharon uvonov and his children. Ulahachnisam lekahuna. They are not yet kohanim. They're just Aaronites. They will be kohanim after this is over. So this is going to make them kohanim. And since it makes them kohanim, it makes sense that the rites that are being performed should in some way be connected to the letter chof or kohen. And therefore, according to all opinions, when it comes to this glazing, it's a Greek glaze. It's for sure, it's got to be connected to the chof yavanis, which is a remes to kahuna. Parshas Vayikra is talking about the offerings, which have no specific connection to induction of kahuna, and therefore it makes sense to bring both opinions. So we didn't answer the question though. So what's up with the Greek stuff? Why the Greek? So here, the Biurim continue on page 8 Samach Beis, and the Rebbe says that on a mystical level, there's a very powerful message being conveyed to us. Yadua, we know that in the Zman Melchemes HaChashmonoyim, at the time of the war of the Hasmoneans, who were the Hasmoneans? Who were they?
Kohanim.
Kohanim. Timuz HaYivonim is Kol HaShmanim. What did the Yivonim, what did the Greeks do? We call them Greeks. It's not necessarily modern-day Greece. Modern-day Greece is a relic. But the Assyrian Greeks, as they were called, but they're called Greeks Yivonim, they went about and they defiled all of the Shmanim, all of the oil, which was where? In the Beis HaMikdash. Av B'sefer Shel Davar, in the end, how well did they do? How successful were they in the end? Not very successful. In fact, the Greek Empire crumbled, and this was the beginning of the downfall. Antiochus himself basically committed suicide at the end of this. So B'sefer Shel Davar Batlum Mizimasim. All their, the things they wanted to accomplish, did not get accomplished. And how, what, how did we overcome their desire? Which is, forget not just the militaristic goal that they had. More important than the militaristic, what were they trying to do? They were trying to forever taint and change our Jewish civilization and culture, which is punctuated by what? By holiness, by subservience to Hashem, by worship of God. And they came along and they said, no, 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 you could do the same thing if it's a cultural thing. You can do it culturally, but don't tell us stories about holiness and purity. We don't need that. We do away with that. See, look at this. I could defile the oil, they said, and it looks exactly the same. So it's baloney. This thing your rabbis are telling you, this pie in the sky God, this business of ritual purity, which has no scientific evidence whatsoever, it's baloney. We're scientific people. We deal with the things we can see, things we can touch, things we can understand, things that make sense to us. This doesn't make sense to us. And of course, ritual purity doesn't make any sense. That's what they set out to do. But there was one little cruise of oil that they miraculously missed. Ah, and that little cruise of oil restores the spirit of the Jewish people. And that's the source, that's the origin of the whole miracle of Hanukkah and the light of the menorah, and like the Ramban says, the eternity of the Beis HaMikdash. It's all in that little menorah. It's all in that little cruse of oil. So in Hasidus it says that Shemen is symbolic of wisdom. Tzreim is l'chokhmah. And the Shemen, the oil in the Beis HaMikdash, that represents what we call Chokhmah de Kedusha, the wisdom of Torah, wisdom of holiness, which is has an element of supra-rationality attached to it. It's wise, it's wisdom, but it's wisdom which is sacred, and therefore there's an element of beyond just the logical and the rational. And that's what the Greeks couldn't stand. They said, no chachma, no holy wisdom, that makes no sense. Wisdom is wisdom. If it's wise, it's wise. If it's dumb, it's dumb. End of story. There's no difference between Moses, Aristotle, or Confucius. Just smart people, that's all. And therefore, this was what they sought to defile what we call the Chachma of Kedusha. The Pach HaShemen, the one little cruse of oil, has got the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. And that represents, the seal of the Kohen Gadol, represents the highest level of devotion to Hashem, what we call in the language of Chassidus and Kabbalah, the concept of Keser. Because there's Chachma, which means the mind, the brain, then there's the crown, which crowns that, which is above that. Which is that's the prime mover and shaker of what influences Chachma. Like when a person wants very badly to get somewhere, or knows that this will give him delight or pleasure, that motivates him to think a certain way. Ultimately, we say Ratzon Mata Seichel, that desire and will is what causes intellectual stimulation. It makes you understand or think in a certain direction, which is why bribery is so bad. But that's another subject. So the Kohen Gadol's Pach HaShemen represents that highest level, and therefore here's the remez. Here we are, some people in a desert. a Moshe Rabbeinu, an Aaron, future Kohen, and there's a business of a glaze. And the Torah that Rashi is telling us, you should know that this glaze is not just a little bit of oil on a piece of dough somewhere lost in a desert. That this is the beginning of a process that would lead to the salvation of the Jewish people. It will empower the Kohanim. The Kohanim will not only represent us in the Beis HaMikdash, but it is the Kohanim ultimately who will restore our national sovereignty. It is the Kohanim who will bring back and rejuvenate Yiddishkeit itself. All empowered by Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's the Greek glaze. That's why it has to be B'chof Yevonis, because that Ois Chof, that letter Chof, represents the concept of Keser, represents marshaling the highest forces of holiness, which enabled the Kohanim to overcome the darkness of the ancient Assyrian Greeks who sought to take away and to defile the Shem and the wisdom of Torah. And this enabled them to be able to bounce back, overcome, and ultimately to triumph. And so you see, there's a lot of deep history here. And this is not just simply a particular letter where Rashi says, whatever, it's a Chaf Yevanis, but the reason Rashi quotes our sages saying this is because it gives us a much deeper understanding and appreciation of what's really going on here, who the Kohanim are about to become, and what they will achieve in their long and distant future.